ब्रह्मचारुकाधिपति सहम्पति कचंजलि अनदिवरम आयाचता संदित सत्ता परजातका जातिक तेसे तु धम्मं अनुकंपिमं भजाम।
नमो तस्सा भगवतो अरहतो सम्मा सम्बुद्धस्सा। नमो तस्सा भगवतो अरहतो सम्मा सम्बुद्धस्सा। नमो तस्सा भगवतो अरहतो सम्मा सम्बुद्धस्सा। बुद्धं धम्मं संघं नमस्सामि। So I'm enjoying myself. So it counts, right? It's very nice to practice with you. I've known many of you for many years, so it's good to see that we're still on the path. My own confidence comes from my own experience, so my words come from that experience, but it's always for reflection. And that's the way I've always been taught, that if this doesn't work for you, then it's not your problem. You know, it's like it's not your fault. So it's just you find a teaching which works for you. So this works for me, and so that's what I offer. There's many ways to kind of approach Theravada Buddhism, and there's many ways of Buddhism, and there's many ways of spirituality. So there are all manner of paths out there. This particular path doesn't answer all questions. Like Theravada Buddhism doesn't tell you how to make a dovetail joint. It doesn't describe that. So sometimes theories of economics or issues of social justice. You can have Buddhist perceptions behind them, but that's not the real point of Buddhism. And the point of Buddhism is really to try to create communities which are supportive of each other and spiritual life, and then individuals within those communities, given the opportunities to go deeply into spiritual life. So again, it doesn't answer all questions. I think you've heard me say that. There was a woman who was doing a PhD, coming to a conference in Wellington so many, many years ago, and she asked me, does Buddhism prove or disprove theory of evolution? I said, what? What do I care? So sometimes you get very kind of questions like that to me seem like totally pointless. I mean, to me the question is, does it work? Right? Does the knife cut the bread? Does it address your existential predicament? Does it provide you food for serious thought? Does it give you ethical guidelines in the way you're conducting your life? Does it, for me, does it have a transcendent vision in it? But also, is it grounded in the ordinary? So all those, for me, are important things, and so this works for me. So I've been talking about a state of awakeness, emphasizing that, the awake mind, which hopefully noticing that it's not something you get through desire, it's something you remember through presence. So it's always available. And the preoccupation with the objective world of sense experience, thought, emotion, history, past, future, all of that preoccupation prevents you from being available to that silent presence of knowing. Simple enough. So that's the sort of theme I'm probably going to talk about till I die. It's the only one that really interests me. But Buddhism is very rich teaching, so I think the question, a very important question, is what modes of practice, what modes of thought, what modes of emotion would be conducive to that awakening? That would be paramount. What ways of living? So I mentioned the idea of non-desire. So for me, perfect balance, if you painted it in a kind of via negativa way, would be non-preoccupation, non-becoming, and non-resistance. Well, what does that leave? Well, presence, awareness. So it's interesting that there is a lot of kind of use of negative language in that way to help people ponder these things. So like non-becoming is a very powerful perception for me that brings me to see the sort of sense of trying to get somewhere, trying to become something or get something, right? So it acts as a mirror, as I was saying, rather than as an absolute, thou must not become. You know, it's bad monk. And then the other, non-resistance, if I'm with pain, say, or some emotional thought pattern or something, not wanting it there, not wanting that. So it's not so much concerned about the content there, but it's what's my attitude to the content, non-resistance. And that becomes a mirror, right? And that's around the types of craving which we talk about, and the non-preoccupation, and not just always being absorbed into designing furniture or whatever, or going to Lee Valley store. I do that too often. Anyway, so the way I think about the three types of craving which we have in the Four Noble Truths, we say bhava, vibhava, and kama tanha. And bhava is the whole sense of becoming. And it's not wrong to have a goal and so on and so forth, but in terms of this kind of immediacy of the spiritual life, bhava tanha, the craving to get, become, or be something else, prevents you from being in the present moment. And that might not be so obvious. So typically most of us have probably had some kind of profound experience of silence or something, and there's some samadhi experience, and all of us have suffered from that, trying to retrace that, or trying to get that back, right? Oh, now I've got it, now I've lost it. And that whole bhava is based upon, perhaps, you know, teachers are telling you, you need to get first jhana, second jhana, third jhana, fourth jhana, then you have to be a sotapatti, then anagami, sakadagami, arahant, so you have to get all this stuff. Yeah, that's a lot of stuff. And you can't get on eBay, you see, there's a problem. So you read all that stuff, and you know, it teaches you confidence, and to get that, you need to get this, and then you need to get that, and then you had your experience or whatever, and all that means, ooh, I've got to get something. But you don't see that that might be true, maybe that those events take place in spiritual development, but the methodology is actually letting go of past and future. But having read that stuff, I know for me, I got really greedy for enlightenment. And I tried so hard, I had a seizure. And Ajahn Chah said, take it easy, will you? So, you know, I certainly know bhava, tanha, how that works in the mind. And I know it doesn't work. Which isn't to say that I don't have a goal. I do have a goal. And that goal is our immediate awakening. That's what I trust. So bhava tanha, how might that work for you? You might be trying to get something from your practice or get somewhere in your practice. And that you'd have to see, otherwise your mind would be in conflict with the way things are, no? And be suffering. Because you wouldn't see the craving to become, and because you wouldn't see that, you'd be motivated by that or grasping that, and your energy would always be pushing forward to the next whatever. And if you didn't see that, you'd feel frustrated. And then you'd let go of that, you know, you feel frustrated, you let go of that, you feel really peaceful, and the next meditation you try to be really peaceful again. Here we go again, rebirth. You see that thing cycling through. So the word for me of non-becoming is a way to mirror that very human tendency. People ask me about ambition and things like that. Fine. This isn't about your architectural career or your ambitions for your children. It's a spiritual thing. It's about flow of consciousness. The other ambition's fine. But don't suffer about it, right? So try not to conflate those kind of very worldly, like if someone is having a university degree, you want them to try and do well. You want them to do that. You don't say to a second-year student, it's all empty. Yeah, you're right, let's smoke dope, right? So not to conflate, not to make these absolutes. This is what happens. We hear something like non-becoming, and then our minds just jump into some kind of social absolute. Yeah, but what about? Oh, no. It's for reflection rather than as a kind of sociological belief that you then take on, and then it all seems ridiculous. So as a reflection, as a meditative posture, non-becoming. So like a very immediate thing, right? And then non-resistance is vibhava-tanha, and vibhava-tanha is the craving to get rid of, to annihilate, to repress, to suppress, etc., etc. So I could feel, I can look at something and feel annoyed by it, and I can look at something else and not dwell on the sign of annoyance. I could just look at something else, but that wouldn't be repressive. It's not from craving. It's just from wisdom. So if I notice something, like about myself maybe, right? Like I'm any good Toronto boy, I'm very self-critical, you know, I really developed that. Any good Canadian. I always say I'm sorry and so on. Thank you. What was the joke? The joke we had in the monastery? Letterman once said that you can tell a Canadian because they thank the automatic money teller. Thank you. Anyway, vibhavatana. So like, let's say, I feel annoyed at the structure. Like, what is this doing? Right? I'm not. But and then I keep looking at it. What is this doing? What's this doing? What's this doing here? And then my mind just looks at a sign, a thing, and doesn't like it and keeps going there. Well, I can just look at something else. And that's not repression. It's wisdom, isn't it? I don't have to always look at the thing that annoys me. Like, I have to work this out. It's annoying. Yeah, I have to work this out. I can just know. I can look at something pleasant. So I can move my consciousness around to different objects, not from vibhava tanha, but I might move it around with vibhava tanha, and that wouldn't work. That would be a conflict. So I'm not in conflict with things. So sense restraint is very much like that, right? But so vibhava tanha, there's that in us which resists, doesn't want things to be this way, and then we may make efforts to get to another place. And then so vibhava and bhava work together, don't they? And it's always like a tension, a sense of lack. And you can see, if you can awaken to that without hurting yourself, you know, without being foolish in some kind of way, to look at that kind of ripping of the heart, as it were, in these directions, and just bear with unfulfilled desire. So you want something, you don't have it, and you bear with unfulfilled desire. You don't want something, and it won't go away. You bear with unfulfilled desire. Now that's a difficult pathway, but that's the pathway that the Buddhists suggest is synonymous with the unconditioned or with Nibbana. So one of the ways, the third noble truth is that there is the end of suffering, and the end of suffering has to be realized, and that's synonymous with Nibbana. So let's say maybe I'm just like sitting meditation, and then I'm feeling really kind of restless, impatient, right? And I just awaken to the feeling of restlessness and impatience. Now my desire mind wants to do something, fix it, get rid of it. No, I'm just going to be fully present to impatience and restlessness. What's it really like? And that's hard to do, because it's unpleasant, and I want the pleasant. But I've practiced enough with this now that I'm just going to be, it can be here all day, fine. And it's very uncomfortable, it's very uncomfortable, it's very uncomfortable. It doesn't seem like I'm getting anywhere. And I'm not even going to try to fix this. It's just the way it is, restlessness. And then it ceases. And then there's silence. Not because I sought out a compensation which distracted me, but because I saw the cessation of desire. You'll find that works. Sometimes like the sitting might have seemed like, you know, you're just like a total basket case, right? Nothing's working. You just say, okay, this is the feeling of nothing working. Very good line. Nothing's working. And you walk around, you come back. Next sitting is really boing. Now, why didn't I get that before? But don't you see that the before was the cause for this? It was the causal condition for this. It was being willing to be with a crappy mind, right? A horrible memory, whatever. It's like this. And so rather than kind of always focusing on the content, what we're trying to focus is on the attitude behind the content, specifically around desire. Bhava tanha, vibhava tanha. And that's very subtle. It's very subtle. No one can, you can't really, you have to figure that one out yourself. You have to feel it, don't you? It's a very kind of feeling thing. And then kama tanha is, it's called, say, the grossest example would be hedonism, sensual, kind of being lost in sensuality, but it's the preoccupation with any experience, thought, usually, right? You're planning something or whatever, just a preoccupation constantly, mulling stuff over, doing something, thinking about something. And that, you can see that preoccupation precludes a possibility to be available to the unconditioned, because you're in the conditioned. You're in thought, you're in planning. Yeah? So non-preoccupation. So I use those three words for the three types of craving. Second noble truth is that the cause of suffering is attachment to craving, or being driven by craving. So that, you know, if you're going to take Four Noble Truths as a sort of model for your spiritual practice, and you need to get your head around desire. So my knee starts to hurt, I move. I'm not going to hurt myself. Would you like cream or milk? Well, I'll take cream. We never get milk in the monastery. We never get cream in the monastery. Thank you very much. So I can do that, right? I can do that. But I realize that as I'm meditating, right, I'm meditating, there's this cultivation of a lot of refinement, a lot of a refinement of attention around the way things are. So these three are really, really important. And what we talk about in Buddhism a lot is that what are the causes and conditions for peace into the future, and no matter what is going on now, whatever going on in your heart and mind and family, what could I do now with this situation, with this mind state, with this social situation, that would be a factor for peace for myself and others in the future? That I can do. I might not necessarily have a happy mindset or a happy social situation, but I can. And what could I do now? What kind of causes can I create now so that in the future they result in peace? And So then, in this more kind of subtle consideration now of the awake mind, which I'm trying to suggest, what mind states, if you develop them, would be conducive to that sense of awakeness. So, because I can develop mind states without craving, right? I can create pictures in my mind without craving. I can think of people and think of them in hateful ways, think of them in loving ways. Right? I can do that. So I have the possibility to create and to generate and to motivate and to make intentions. So what kind of intentions or mind states would be conducive to this awakening? What would make it strong and easier to do? Well, obviously generosity, you know, because generosity is the opposite of desire. When I'm generous, I don't want anything. You know, how many do you want? 2? I'll give you 4. There you go, right? So obviously generosity is a factor for the awakened mind. Makes it much easier. And obviously, mean-heartedness and stinginess is not. No way, I won't even give you 1. I got mine, Jack. And so, I mean, that's so obvious, isn't it? So obvious. But generosity is not the goal. It's the method. Because if generosity is the goal, then what are you going to do when you're not generous? You feel miserable. But can you be generous 24/7? No. Sometimes I say to the monks, leave me alone. You get your own problems. I want to do my woodwork. Because I do deal with a lot of problems, by the way. And sometimes I feel really generous, right? And plugged in. And sometimes I say, if you ask me one more thing, I'll... And what's wrong with that? Nothing wrong with that, is it? It's just human. But if I take the position that Viradhammo should be generous all the time, that that's not a method, that's an absolute, which becomes an ideal, which then haunts me and becomes an inner tyranny. It just gets totally perverted. So generosity is a method. So as generous as we can be generous, right? And then when you're not generous, so this is a feeling of being not generous. It'll change. So your refuge is in awareness, right? And you do what you can, and you keep cultivating the wholesome. And when the difficult whatever come up, then that's not a problem either, because the path is the awakening to the way things are, and what helps the path is generosity, but it's not an absolute. That's very important, because we tend to be very idealized, right? So when our ideals, we're kind of liberal mindsets, I suppose. How many voted for Trump here? I don't know. So that's the way we're conditioned, and so we have a strong humanitarian streak, and so on and so forth. But you can't. Maybe you can, but I can't be generous-hearted 24/7. I really can't. I've tried. And then if I think I should be, then I feel horrible. Oh, gosh, I wasn't sensitive to Amarasiri yesterday. Oh, dear. I hope he doesn't leave me. Which would be a disaster. So it's the method. Isn't it? Compassion. Think about compassion, that sense of or any kind of empathy, whether it's empathy of joy or empathy of pain. That's really contrary to desire and selfishness, isn't it? When I have empathy for your success, and I say, hey, good on you, hope you do it again. Or your suffering, I say, wow, that must be difficult. Yeah, that must be difficult. That's empathy. Right? But can you always feel joy for the success of others? No, sometimes you feel jealousy. What do you mean you got enlightened before me? That's a ripoff. Come on. Now, if I think I should be empathetic and joyful all the time, then I feel guilty. But did that feeling of jealousy, was that something I constructed at breakfast in order to have it at 4 in the afternoon? No, it just arose because of causes and conditions. It's not mine. It's nature's. It's natural. It arose. And I have to bear with it. Oh, yeah, this is what jealousy feels like. Very threatening. You know, if you're very kind of big-hearted and you've been around for a while as a monk and you feel jealous, whoa, it's very threatening, right? Because it seems permanent. It seems like who you are. But you're not that. You just arose because of causes and conditions. So you don't have to panic. But you have to actually just make it conscious. Oh, jealousy feels, yuck. Feels the same. If you make it really conscious, what are you doing? Then you're going against the desire to not have it. So jealousy comes up. Non-resistance. I don't want non-resistance. Or you're going the other way with the jealousy. I hope they get a flat tire. The kids aren't really happy anyway, right? You indulge in it, right? You go one way or the other. When you just awaken to jealousy, and that's the difficult bit. You awaken to something negative like that, and then you have to bear with it. You know, everything in your desire pattern is trying to either justify your jealousy in some kind of quasi-rational fashion, or trying to repress it and get rid of it. And that's what the desire is doing. And now you have to sit with this very unpleasant feeling. But all of this is just unpleasant. And you just, right, oh, this is unpleasant. It's very unpleasant. Feels this way, feels this way, feels this way. And it doesn't feel like you're getting anywhere with this. And then it ceases. The end of desire. Third Noble Truth. And that is a peace which is really delightful because, you know, you haven't been fooled now by this haunting, maybe, voice of whatever it is. So if one trains in this way through a retreat and sitting practice, non-becoming, non-resistance, non-preoccupation, right, and you do that a lot in more and more subtle ways, then surely after 7 days, the intention, capacity, skill to do that throughout the rest of your life really will be enhanced, won't it? It'll be strengthened. So even though you know maybe you're not experiencing anything difficult, and I certainly hope not, but if you are, so be it. You can still practice this, right? and do it all the time. And that's the idea of this craft that we do. You train with the ordinary. You know, you train with the non-complicated, with the stuff that you can sort of apply these principles to, and that becomes an intuitive way of operating in the future. In those situations where you don't really have time to think about Dharma. You know, that's what we say, don't we? We say the practice clicks in when there are stresses and strains in life. It clicks in. People often say that when there's a lot of sickness in the family or you're sick or whatever. So these exercises are really leading to peace, and the causes and conditions of peace, this is what we can do. We can practice generosity, we can have some compassion, have a moral basis for our lives, and most important, awaken. And you can awaken to anything, positive or negative. And you keep doing that, and over time, it's a paradox, it's always present moment, and you can never see the future. Have you ever asked that question to yourself when you're sitting? When's the next moment? Can't find it. Makes you very silent. It's quite a fun one. You sit there, when's the next moment? It's a curious kind of question. But chronologically what happens is the heart becomes informed and wise and intuitive around what this practice of non-grasping is about, and that we have in our possibility this deep peace. And interesting enough, it's conjoined with love. Isn't that amazing? It didn't need to be. I don't know why, but certainly that's the way. So all those aspects of love that we can cultivate, compassion and generosity and forgiveness and gratitude, all those things, they're not just kind of, they're not sentimental. You know, this, the cultivation of the heart isn't a sentimental affair. Sentimentality is why maybe men more than women, I don't know, but sentimentality always can turn men off. Oh God, you're wet, Viridhamma. You're such a... And that's the mistake of the cynic. You know, the cynic looks at metta bhavana as being sentimental, but it's actually quite tough. Quite tough to do, quite hard to do, to sustain that. So it's not, sentimentality is like some kind of, we are all one. Now what does that mean? Okay, it's some kind of abstract idea, but actually the blood and guts relationships that we'd have with people and the differences we have and all of that, and to sustain an open heart, and that's a whole different program. So, although we're saying like just awaken with and come to the sense of non-becoming, non-resistance, non-preoccupation, it doesn't mean that we can't do things. No, we can do stuff, but it's just to build up the barami, the centeredness, the strength of a mind which then can hold the present moment in a very, very good way. All right, I'll leave that for your reflection.
Andamayang dhammakatha sadhukarang dadamase sadhu 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 anumodhami.
Garfield has a good voice too. Now that's he's got a lovely voice. I'll look at these questions tomorrow, okay? So let's finish by closing to...